shopping.
This is Steve Gallington of the People's News, which can be heard on Sundays at noon, Mondays at 9 a.m., and Thursdays at 9 a.m. on 90.1 KPFT HD2, Houston's community radio.
This is KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM and FM HD1.
Hi, everyone, and thanks for tuning into award-winning So What's Your Story, the only show in Houston devoted to storytelling where we place a spotlight on ordinary people with extraordinary stories to tell. And you're going to find it only here on KPFT HD1, Houston's community station, 90.1 on the dial, or if you prefer, on www.kpft.org. You know, what makes us an icon in community radio is the range of storytellers that we invite on this show. They're your neighbors, friends, greenhorn, or seasoned storytellers, letting us through windows of their souls every week. And we've been doing it since 2008. Today, I asked, well, actually ambushed a few students from my storytelling class at UHD to share some stories with poignant lessons in self-discovery. Parables like those found in most stories, but these are lined with simple insights. My guest tellers are Andrew Eggleston, Josh Perez, Mai Pham, Bianca Mendoza, Sylvia Mata, and Mania Imam, Andy Jimenez, and San Juana Cortina. It may sound like we're going to be here for a while, but don't worry, these are short and meaningful narratives. After all, they're the hardest to craft. Ben Franklin said it best, "If I had more time, I'd write a shorter letter." Mai, let's start with you. You're a junior majoring in business. You're also an exchange student from Vietnam, and most exchange students, regardless of where they're from, stay away from speech performance courses like the plague. Now, I would imagine that college courses in storytelling aren't very common in your culture. So what would motivate you to enroll in a storytelling class?
Well, I like reading and writing stories ever since I was a kid. And in my high school or even in my university, we didn't really have communication class or communication major. So when I came to UHD and I saw this class, I felt like I want to test myself a little bit. So I enrolled in the class.
Well, great. I hope you're not disappointed. But, you know, the idea of not having a lot of communication classes in your colleges tell you exactly how you guys feel about them. They're not real popular. They aren't going over well with many, many people. And I'm so glad that you're in there. Are you disappointed?
No, the class looks great.
Yeah, of course you're going to say that. I want everybody to know that I paid Mai to say that and I appreciate it. All right. Now, you told some wonderful stories during the semester, Mai. But the one that you're about to share had a lesson most of us rarely learn. Tell us your story.
There could be 10 people in a room, but all you need is just one person who can understand you. For me, that room is a swimming pool that I used to go every day. And that person was someone who used to sit right beside me. I love swimming. I've been doing that since I was 10 years old, and I continued that hobby even when I was a high school student. I joined swimming club in school. I met a lot of amazing people, but then I met a guy whom I still see as one of my best friends in the world. Even though we have different genders, we have different practice requirements, but the feeling of having him beside me couldn't be replaced by anyone else. We talked every day about the tournaments, about the practices, and about how much we love swimming. One day on my way to the practice, I heard from the captain that he resigned from the club because of an injury. He dislocated his shoulder while he was preparing for the tournaments. Losing someone who I expect to always remain by my side left me devastating. I couldn't really name the feeling that I was feeling at that moment. I immediately ran to find him. I'd found him sitting on the bench, looking up the sky. I got close to him and I looked into his eyes. Darkness, just full of darkness. His eyes told me that not only his life, not only swimming, but he didn't really have any motivation at all. He was always a very amazing person to me, and seeing him like that got me angry. My mom always tells me that if I get angry, to stay silent for 5 minutes, but I didn't do it that time. I remember talking to him in a very loud voice, like I was shouting at him. Come on, please, I love you. Don't give me that look. This is just swimming. This is just a club activity. It's not nothing important. You can do even much better in real life, right? He didn't really say anything back to me, just their silence. And quickly, very quickly, karma came get me. When I was practicing for the tournaments, I also dislocated my shoulder, exactly as what he did. I couldn't move my right hand. My shoulder hurt a lot. But what hurt me the most is remembering what I said to him. I didn't realize how arrogant it was to talk to him like that. I didn't realize how much important swimming was to him than it was to me. I didn't realize how wrong it was to tell someone how they should feel. It's never correct to tell someone how they should react about their own problem. What we can do is to sit beside them, understanding how hard it is for them to face the problem and understanding how strong they already are at that moment, which were all the things that I didn't do to him. I resigned from the club and I went to that bench, the bench that I found him sitting that day. I sat down, also looked up to the sky. I felt like someone was beside me, so I looked over and I saw his face. He didn't really say anything. He just sat down, stayed next to me. We sat next to each other, looked up the sky, and felt alive.
Beautiful story, Mai. That's a beautiful story. And I just wanted to clarify his, he's not a lazy person, right? You weren't saying that he's lazy, but you thought he was lazy after his injury in terms of getting back to swimming?
He was not a lazy person. He's amazing. He's very hardworking. But after the injury, he just seemed like to have given up. Right. On everything.
Yeah, you know, this is a beautiful story for an awful lot of reasons. It doesn't make any difference whether a person is involved in some sport or working in school, or regardless of what it might be, the lesson is very generic and very, very important. There are a lot of lessons in this story, Mai. If there is one that we need to walk away with, what would that be?
To never tell someone how they should react and how they should respond to their own problem.
And you made that very clear in your story, but I think it's so worth repeating. We can't tell people how to feel. When we do that, we engage in all kinds of cliches, right? Don't worry about it. You'll get over it. There's more fish in the sea. I got over it. So will you. I know exactly how you feel. None of these cliches do anything other than really minimize the problems that another person has. And your story makes that so incredibly clear. Thank you so much. Andrew Eggleston is a fine arts major, and he was in my radio performance class last year, and he came back to haunt me, and I'm glad he did. Andrew, you told a series of stories this semester about one central character, your sister. Now, your commitment to her represents the kind of love most can't even imagine. But before you tell us one of these stories, tell us a little bit about your sister.
So to say, my sister had a mental illness called bipolar depression. She had many suicidal thoughts and didn't live a relatively happy life. However, instead of trying to fix herself, she used her mental illness as a weapon against the rest of my family. A lot of my trauma is centered around the mental and physical abuse that she put on me and my family, putting entire medical facilities against us, and trying to go to near-death situations to get any shred of attention that she desired.
Wow.
However, after all these years of hard work and pain, I can happily say that she has gone and grown above that and is living a more mature and happy life now.
Magnificent, you know, and the proverbial bottom line is that mental illness is always a family disease. It's never one that can be separated, right? I think that your story is going to make this very clear. Tell us your story.
Growing up, I've always wanted to be a superhero, one who would have great confidence and use all the resources in their power to save the day. The problem is I lacked one quality, confidence. For 17 to 18 years, I don't think there was a moment where I could say I was heroic. However, due to one of my sister's incidents, she gave me one moment where I could call myself a hero. At 12 o'clock at midnight, I had just gotten a new video game. I stayed up all night waiting to play it. I would sit down in my chair, rest my head back, and enjoy the night. I heard the door open from outside my door, and I had an ugly feeling of premonition in my stomach. I hear some slight walking, and then I hear a big thud. I put my head back and think, oh no, please don't tell me. Drew, my sister had told me in a weak voice. I got up from my chair, went to my door, opened it, and I see my sister on the ground in a pool of blood. I put my hands on my face and think, this cannot be happening right now. I give myself a quick pat and then try to hoist her up, putting her over my having her over my shoulder. Look, I need you to walk with me. Can you do that? Yes. I can see that on her hand, that the wound that she had made to herself with a box cutter this morning had opened up, gushing blood, creating a trail from her room to mine. We walk to the stairwell, and as we keep walking, she falls over. I catch her before she could fall down the stairs, and I realize that she didn't have the energy to keep moving. So I took a big gulp. I took my right arm, put it under her knees, took my left arm, put it under her back, and had to princess carry her down the stairs. I just realized the situation I was in. It was 12 o'clock at night. I'm princess carrying my sister, who is suffering extreme blood loss, while creating a trail of blood, and me myself being covered in blood. When we get downstairs, I pull up the chair, put her on it, push her head with my finger back to make sure she doesn't fall over, and tell her to stay. I go to my mom's door, began knocking on it. Boom, boom, boom. Mom, we have a serious situation. What? Oh, please don't tell me. Yes, I need you out here now. I walk back and I see my sister fall over and slam her head onto the ground. Oh my gosh. Not also was she losing blood loss, but she could possibly get a concussion because of my poor placement. In a state of panic, I began to pick her up and run her over to the couch. My mom gets out the door, realizes the situation that's going on, and begins to go to the phone and walk and call the cops. I run to the medicine cabinet, grab some bandages, and go straight to my sister and begin wrapping her hand. As I wrap her hand with as much bandages as I could, she said something to me in such a weak tone. Thank you. I paused for a moment, and it just dawned on me that I just did something heroic. Thankfully, the ambulance comes, manages to grab my sister, drive her out to the hospital, and she gets a safe recovery for the night. If I wasn't there, if I wasn't awake at 12 a.m. and sucked up and had the courage to do what I did, I would have lost a family member that night.
Wow, what an incredible story, mm-hmm. Andrew. I know there's so much more to that, but the idea of potentially losing your sister was beyond astonishing. You gave us such a great preview, such a great history of your sister. And I know it's really hard to give us one lesson from something as comprehensive as that. But if there's one, just one lesson that we should learn, what would that be?
No matter how difficult it is, as a person, you should try your best to love them the best you can.
Wow, and that's a lot more prolific than you might think, because we all love differently, but the way that you loved is unfathomable. Wonderful, and it really transformed you. Let's stay with family for a little bit with a story by technical communication major Josh Perez. Josh, technical writing is a familiar field, but tell us a little bit of what technical communication is.
Technical writing and technical communication are basically the same thing. Technical communication is a newer term that is used to describe additional skills like user experience design, information design, and instructional design. Some examples are like tweaking an e-commerce checkout page to make sure the customer has a better experience with it, or creating like those IKEA instruction manuals that you find inside the box.
Gotcha. Yeah. So it's a lot more than just writing, obviously. It's more comprehensive, right? Great. Yeah. Excellent. Yeah, that's got to be pretty marketable. You told a story that contained a surprising topspin about family, right? I think that's the best way to phrase it. Share it with us.
I enjoy Sundays. It's a day in which I can relax and forget about school, my job, and any responsibilities for a little bit. The only thing I don't like about Sundays is that my 8-year-old nephew comes to visit me and my family. Now, don't take it the wrong way. Let me make it clear. I love my nephew. When he was born, I made the promise to be a good role model and to be someone who he could trust. I enjoy being his uncle. I mean, how could I not? When he himself said, "Uncle Josh," when asked, "Which one of your uncles do you enjoy being with the most? Do you have any idea what that did to my ego?" That was a real big boost. Now, you might be asking yourself, "Well, Josh, why don't you like him coming over on Sundays?" The truth is that he reminds me that I'm not a kid anymore. The Sunday that made me come to this realization was a regular Sunday like all the others. We prepped food in the afternoon, sat and ate as a family while enjoying each other's company. Me and my nephew did what we usually do after the meal. We play and do different activities. We run all over the backyard, watch TV, play video games, and talk about different topics that would appeal to an 8-year-old. However, with every activity we did, it made me wish that I could somehow get my childhood back. I didn't want to be an adult and deal with adult responsibilities. I just wanted to be a kid again. That Sunday evening, we said our goodbyes to my sister and nephew, and I walked them out and see them off like I always do. As I was seeing my sister's car leaving the driveway, I caught a glimpse of my nephew smiling and laughing, and for a moment, I wished that was me. Because as soon as I saw him smiling and laughing, I was reminded that I had to get up too early to go to work tomorrow. I was reminded that some bills were to be due soon. I was reminded of all my troubles and adult responsibilities. That same night, I realized that I couldn't be a kid anymore, but I could make my nephew's childhood one he would enjoy and never forget.
All right. Fantastic. You know, I mentioned to Andrew just a little while ago that, well, the way I like to phrase it is that heroes are usually seated right next to you, right? And in your case, father figures are right there, right? They're right there. And the idea of you wanting to be a child all your life, maintain that feeling because you become an adult faster than you might like. So yeah, that's a great attitude.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that I wanted to ask you, I was curious about this when I asked several of you to be on the show, you said that you were surprised that you were asked. Why surprised?
When I originally told the story, I felt that it was shorter than the other ones that were being told that day. But I soon remembered that one of the very first lessons that you taught us was that a story doesn't have to be long just for it to have a good message. Right. And to have an impactful, and for it to be impactful. And I was also surprised that it also, other people feel the same way that I do. Some of us wish that we could go back to being a child even for a couple of seconds.
Right. That's so well put. Yeah, you know, short stories are very powerful. I mean, War and Peace was a really long novel, but nobody wished it were longer. You know what I mean? Yeah, so we want to try to keep things as short as we can. And it's not so much about length, but it is about impact. And your stories really did have an impact. I just wanted our listeners to know that that this group told four stories, technically, this semester. And each one was better than another. And we're talking about a group of people who never really told stories formally before. Am I right, folks? Right? Never really told stories formally before. And I think they'll be the first to admit that it is a little more complicated, a little more challenging to put together a good story than most people might think. Bianca Mendoza is a senior in public communication and media studies. Bianca, it's got to be great to be a senior because you are almost out of here. I know you're looking for an internship and then you'll be making so much money and hiring us all. And we can't wait for that. Good luck to you. Bianca, your family story is laced with unexpected conflict, making the picture that you're about to paint so very memorable. Tell us the story.
As a teenage girl, I used to look at other girls who were also teenagers who had a very close relationship with their moms, and I wondered what that was like. I felt kind of jealous of them because they had that best friend bond that I always wanted with my mom. At some point in my teenage years, I felt some sort of resentment towards my mom because I felt like as the parent that she was, it was her job to set the tone for our relationship. But as I got older, I let go of that feeling because I realized that she didn't have the best example of how a mother-daughter relationship should be. I actually feel like there wasn't a relationship at all. My mom has told me and my siblings a couple of stories about how my grandma was cold towards her and my uncle and my aunt. But there is one story out of all of them that has stuck with me the most. Although she has told us this story several times before, every time she tells it, I can see her eyes fill with that same sadness. After my grandpa passed away, my grandma came to the United States to work to leave and left her kids behind. My mom was only 7 at the time. My mom, my uncle, my aunt, and my great-grandparents were at the bus station and they were with her and watched her as she prepared to leave to the U.S. My mom said that whenever it was time for my grandma to leave, she could tell how anxious my grandma was. She recalls my grandma being worried about leaving something behind. Maybe she was forgetting some clothes or a luggage or some important documents. She was looking around and she was double checking everything. And she was double checking that she had everything that she needed with her. She remembers how the bus drivers and other passengers were also watching her mom leave. She remembers just waiting and waiting and waiting for my grandma to reach out and give her a hug goodbye. But my grandma wasn't worried about that. She was not thinking about saying goodbye or giving her a hug. All she was thinking about was not leaving anything behind. But she was leaving something behind. She was leaving behind her kids. And my mom was never able to get that goodbye hug that she craved so badly from her mom, which left her with an empty feeling for most of her life. And every year it was the same story. My grandma would return to Mexico to visit, then leave again to the US to work, forgetting to take her kids with her.
Wow. Yeah, that's always a stunning story. This is the third time that we've heard it in class and, you know, in practice and now. And it's a stunning story in so many ways. You know, one of the common denominators among all of your stories is that there's a lot of raw honesty. All of your stories really smack of raw honesty, giving each of you a kind of authenticity that really defines your styles. But in your story, Bianca, you really had to give yourself permission to tell this story because it's so hard to be this honest about your mother. What inspired you to tell this story? Why was it so important for you to share it with us?
Well, despite how I mentioned that as a teenager, I didn't have that close relationship with my mom, it's still one of the most important relationships I have in my life. So when it comes to storytelling, I feel like that's whenever you tell stories about people who are close to you, that's the most impactful.
Yeah. And they really are. There's something about having a mother, whether it's a good relationship or not, there's always some kind of a story there. You know, before we take a quick break for announcements, I'd like to remind us all that human beings are really natural storytellers. And we often learn to harness our verbal and nonverbal styles by observing storytellers we knew growing up. I wanted to ask my cast of characters today, I'm curious, who was the storyteller in your home growing up? Sylvia, have you got one in mind?
Well, both my parents were storytellers. My dad is more of a jokester, and my mom is, she likes to tell profound stories about her history. So I got a little
Great.
Bit.
Okay. So what'll make you cry? What'll make you laugh? That's a good variety. I like it. San Juana?
For me, I'd probably say it's a tie between my mom or my uncle. They like, they're always writing off story, like family stories.
Yeah. Josh?
I would also have to say my mom and my dad, they're a variety of stories that comes from both of them.
Right. Andy?
I am baffled at how many stories my mom is able to still tell me to this day.
Now, does that mean you can't wait to hear them, or are you a little bored with them? What does that mean?
I know that they're all good. Okay, I can't wait to hear
we're
more.
We're just checking. Yeah, because she might be listening in and we want to make sure she's happy. Andrew, what about you? Storyteller growing up?
I didn't really have many, but my mom told simple stories, and I think that was enough.
Now, what do you mean by simple? You mean like ones with like a real simple lesson or short or kid stories? Or what does that mean?
She never got into the details, and she was always one for her secrets. But I hope to change that growing up. So.
I love that. That's pretty intriguing sounding. Bianca?
I would also have to say my mom and my dad, they told a lot of stories about their childhood.
Manya, who is the storyteller in your home?
It would be my dad. Every dinner, every family party, he tells so many stories about himself. It's crazy.
Yeah. I can tell by the way you're saying that. Oh, here we go again, right?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I always talk about the fact that I was raised in a storytelling home. My grandmother said everything in story form, and I'm not going to bore listeners with that. I've told enough stories about it. But it's interesting how virtually everyone has someone that they could identify as a storyteller in that home. And I'm not sure if it's because they realize it all of their lives, or if taking a class like this might help them to trigger a thought about who a good storyteller might be. Regardless. Okay. Well, if you're feeling confident about building a storytelling skill, if there happens to be a lot of like-minded people here in town, actually the entire state has some very terrific platforms designed to make that happen. Our sponsor, the Houston Storytellers Guild, is a great place to start. We meet virtually the fourth Tuesday of every month from 7 to 8:30 p.m. And you guys need to listen to this too. Go to www.houstonstorytellers.org and you'll find the Zoom link under events. You can also take your skills to the next level by joining the Tejas Storytelling Association and the National Storytelling Network. Our friends at the Moth meet up at Warehouse Live the second Tuesday of the month. You better get tickets online because they go fast and you will have a great time. It's a great date night too. If you have any ideas or guests that any of you out there want to recommend for our show, I encourage you to drop us a line on our Facebook page or shoot us an email at SWYS, acronym for So What's Your Story, of course, SWYS at KPFT, or text me, Dr. Hank at 832-277-1581. Again, that's 832-277-1581. Label it show idea or SWYS, and I promise I will get back to you. That's how we get lots of guests on this show, thanks to you. You are listening to So What's Your Story on 90.1 FM, KPFT HD1, Houston's community station, 89.5 in Galveston, and 91.9 in Huntsville. We are a Pacifica affiliate and supported exclusively by your donations, which you can always give at kpft.org or by calling 713-526-5738, JAM KPFT, listener-sponsored, corporate-free, Houston's community station, KPFT. Hey, that's a poem. I just realized it. I'm so talented. This is Hank Rubicek with a stellar group of students from my storytelling class at UHD, and they are dispensing some powerful lessons born from their personal stories. Sylvia Mata is a psychology major, and I'm sure that she has impressions of all of us right now. And so I've got a question for you, Sylvia. So, you know, stories are essential to therapy. But there are lots of reasons for this, but tell us one. I realize you're not a psychologist, but I think you've got some insights. Tell us one reason why stories are so important for assessing one's behavior.
Well, stories are essential in therapy. I mean, your job as a therapist is to listen to people's stories, or rather the stories they tell themselves, right? Because memories aren't so much a record of the past, but more so an interpretation. And so these stories create our reality. And in therapy, essentially what we do is listen, reflect, and reframe these stories that might have debilitated us for years and turn them into stories that allow you more freedom.
Yeah, that's a great application of active listening. It really is. That's a great application of how we sense and interpret and respond to information. And interpret is the key word here. But storytelling is incredibly revealing. That's for sure. Now, you have a story with a unique revelation. It deals with culture, but it's so well focused and phrased. We're all going to learn a lot from this one. Tell us your story.
So when I was 8 years old, I lived in China with my family, and we are of Latin descent. So never did I imagine, one, that we would move across the country or that we'd go to any place like China. But it was there that I saw that life in the world was so much more than I imagined possible. So, of course, it was never the same after that. We immersed ourselves into the culture every day, if not every other day, and I learned enough Chinese to get by. I'd carry my tiny little dictionary pocketbook with me everywhere, and I'd even serve as my family's translator with what little words I knew. If you asked me today, I could probably name 12 words, 10 of them being the numbers 1 through 10. But anyway, the city of Beijing itself was very dense, very polluted, and very polluted. You'd see people wearing masks every day, typically because the air quality index was usually in the reds. And on top of that, the poverty was very rampant. Everywhere I turned, there was someone without a home. Where instead of a roof, there was the endless sky, or a tarp, or a palm leaf, or a trash can lid. And families would disperse themselves along the streets, asking for money at different points to maximize their opportunity. They'd sell incense, wooden carvings, trinkets, whatever art they could make with whatever resources they had. And sometimes they'd even come up to me, an 8-year-old girl, asking me for money. But then I'd be pulled away, back to my happy little life, so full of support. But along with their misery of living on the pavement, I saw the ostracism they faced. I saw people refusing to look into the eyes of humanity, scrunching their faces in disgust and stepping over them like litter. But I understood why people had such a hard time looking at poverty. It was hard to look at. It was really hard to look at because, of course, empathy hurts. But I remember thinking that this discomfort that I felt had to be nothing compared to their actual suffering. They were missing limbs. I had all of mine. They're not fasting to stay in good shape. They're actually starving. So my mom, upon seeing my distress, she leans down and tells me that these are victims of circumstance and that they aren't any less deserving of love or care than anyone else. So she hands me a couple yen to give to a girl that looked just about my age. And when I walk over to her, I stand and just look at her. I look her in the eyes, and what I see myself. She looked just like me, or rather, maybe a different version of me. And when I give her the money, she bows to me. So I bow back, and then we both run off back to our mothers, who see each other and bow to each other too. It was then that we parted and went our own ways.
Yeah, it's amazing to know that we really do duplicate each other a lot more than you might think. There are some really weighty lessons in that narrative. What is absolutely the single most important lesson that you don't want us to forget?
I would say maybe don't be afraid to look suffering in the eyes.
Wow. That is pretty powerful. Don't be afraid to look suffering in the eye. And your imagery really reinforced that. You've got so many motifs to reinforce it. Stepping over people like litter. Amazing. Wow. Manya Imam is a sophomore general communication studies major with the story infused with a unique sense of drama, I'd like to think. Amanya, this is kind of tricky, but without revealing the content of your story, what motivated you to tell it in class?
I think it's important to know that some moments in life are necessary and can shape your entire future. No matter how painful or embarrassing it might be, everything happens for a reason, and I think that was worth sharing.
Yeah, everything happens for a reason is an old adage, but you know, adages are born of truths. And I think that your story makes that as clear as anyone I've ever heard. Share it with us.
I'm a professional makeup artist and have been for the past 8 years. People ask me every day how I got into makeup, and it really is an unexpected story. Normally, I have a terrible memory, but I remember every detail of this night like it was yesterday, but in reality, it was 12 years ago. So we've just finished dinner and my mom is talking to a friend on the phone. My sisters are out of the house and my dad is in his bedroom watching a TV show. My sisters usually help me out with all things beauty, but this time they weren't around. So I asked my mom earlier that night if she could help me wax my upper lip, because all of the other preteen girls at school were doing it. And so, of course, I had to hop on the bandwagon. She said yes, but she was on the phone for so long that it felt like days. And being the impatient little girl I was, I decided to take matters into my own hands. There I was, a 12-year-old girl, sitting on my bathroom counter, heating up hot wax. Can you guess what happened next? Yep, I burned myself. Second degree burn right on my top lip. It was all shades of red, and it was just not pretty to look at. Imagine going to middle school with that on your face, especially because kids can be so mean at that age. I let out a loud scream and ran to my mother crying, and she immediately hangs up the phone. What did you do to your face? She looks at me as I'm crying my eyes out. This was unarguably the worst pain I had ever felt in my life. My parents rushed me to the emergency room, and I have to tell this dreadful story to the doctors. I'm given some medicine and some healing ointment and a letter to my school excusing my absence for the next few days. The healing process was even worse because the burn started to scab up and leave a huge scar on my face. I stayed home for about 2 weeks to save myself from the embarrassment, but obviously I had to start going back to school and show my face. I start going back to school and everybody is questioning what happened to me, where I was for the past few weeks, and I had to tell them that I went back to my home country because there was no way I was going to tell them what actually happened. Luckily, no one noticed the scar because this is when I started wearing makeup. I bought the best coverage foundation I could find, watched all the YouTube videos I could watch, and started waking up early before school and doing my makeup to cover up the scar. I eventually started getting good at it and enjoying it, and I would get so many compliments at school. The scar started to fade, and I realized I enjoyed doing my makeup every day and decided I want to pursue a career in cosmetics.
Yeah, how do you feel when you revisit that story?
Honestly, I think it's just kind of funny because at the time I thought this was the worst thing that could ever happen to me. Yeah. But in reality, it was just something that really just helped me figure out what I wanted to do with my life.
Yeah, we kind of call that disaster fantasy. Everything is worse and it looks magnificent, great. You know, the last two stories are examples of pure narratives, highly charged episodes with the story purpose as clear as day. But communication major, marketing minor, Andy Jimenez has a story fueled by a fusion of fear and distress. Andy, let's shift the mood a little bit and jump into it, huh?
Right. At the end of a long, stressful day of working retail, the best side for me is when customers leave. And when they don't, there's always bound to be a catch. So as I was walking through the aisles, picking up items that were misplaced or left on the floor for whatever reason, I noticed the man standing in the corner of the hygiene aisle, staring at toothbrushes. He was wearing a gray hoodie, blue jeans, and a pair of shades. So I walked towards him and said, "Hey, sorry to bother you, but our store is closing down. Make sure to check out your stuff before they close the cash register down." The man looked in my direction, and he didn't say a word. I didn't say anything more and just walked away, because my gut was telling me that silence was the best decision going forward. So I went back to the main register where my friend Orlando was. He's one of those usual go happy guys, you know, always willing to help people out, patient with everyone, all the qualities you can think of when it comes to having a good friend. I told him to not close the register yet, as there was still one customer in the store. So after a minute or two of just, you know, chit-chatting about our day, the man finally walked up to the counter, but he didn't have anything that he was going to buy. So Orlando asked, "Do you need anything behind here, sir?" And without a response, the man lifted his jacket to show us a handgun holstered on his waist. And then my heart BPM just immediately shot up. I've never seen an actual gun before. So, and death was staring at me right in the eyes. And my body froze. And my hands just slowly lifted themselves up. My eyes were the only thing I felt that I could control. And I just stared at Orlando, who was quickly emptying the cash register and putting all the dollar bills on a counter. The man quickly stuffed the bills on his pocket and ran out the store. And me and Orlando just sat there, speechless. Our manager quickly came running to us, and she looked over the empty cash register and said, "Did he take all the money?" Orlando still didn't say anything. Neither did I. Our manager got on a phone call, which I presume was our store manager, and we both just clocked out and left the store. So the day after, I texted Orlando since we were both scheduled to work the night shift again. Think you're ever going to go back there again? He instantly texted back, absolutely not. Well, neither am I.
All right. All right. You know, and I mentioned this in class when you told the story that your boss just want to smack him, right? Just want to, hey, did he take all the money? Doesn't care how you are, if you're experiencing some kind of dramatic, traumatic stress or anything, right? Did he take all the money? It's all about that, right? That's what it's all about. So you experience any kind of trauma afterwards?
Thankfully, no. But I do try to be more prepared in case I find myself in a situation like that again, because I don't want my body to go in shock.
Yeah. So how do you prepare yourself? You wear a hoodie too, or what do you do?
Okay. Prepare? Well, yeah, I get ready for the worst, you know?
Yeah. No, I know what you mean though. You got to build that strength. Honest to God.
Yeah.
You know, the cliche, last but not least, fits fine arts major San Juana Cortina to a T. I asked her at the outset of the semester if she told stories before, because she seemed so comfortable in both crafting and delivering them. Ironically, it's the simplicity of the topic in her story that makes it so pronounced. San Juana, as with Andy, let's just jump into your story.
Dinner is always a special time. Dinner is when you catch up, when conversation flows, when you wind down and you hear stories you've heard for the millionth or first time. It's always interesting watching the faces and thoughts that cross someone when they hear a story they're already familiar with. My dad, for example, is now 51 years old, and I can only imagine he's heard this story so many times he could probably recite it himself. I mean, it's a story of how he got his name. So there were 11 of us seated at the dinner table. My mother is at the head, then it follows my dad, me, my brother Elias Alexander, my tia Yaya, Ana, my cousin, my tio Nano, my other cousin Juan, my sister Andrea, Apa, and Wale. Each of us eating and having our own segment of conversation, forks lightly scraping the plates of food being passed around, the smell of tortillas fresh off the comal. It's homey. It's safe. Apa nods to Wale as he's picking up food with the tortilla, saying, Nita was asking me earlier why Erigo doesn't have the same name as me. My apa's name is Elias, and my dad is the firstborn. So what I naturally always assumed was that every firstborn son would have the same name as their father and be a junior. At least that's what and how all the other males in my family got their names, and I was just curious about it. My dad, who was talking to my mom, heard this, looked over at me with a smile on his face. He then leaned back into his chair with a huff of a laugh, like he's almost saying with his body, here we go again. Wale then turns to me and says, oh my God, I can't believe I never told you. She adjusts herself and leans forward. Then she says, we were always going to name him Elias. That was the plan. But then your abuelo decided to spring on me at like 7 months pregnant that I could name the baby whatever I wanted, that it didn't have to be Elias. When she said this, I looked at my papa with my jaw dropped. And he looked sheepish. Well, about as sheepish as a 70-something-year-old man can look. And I side-eyed my dad, who was also looking at me with amusement, who then says, oh yeah, Chimpu, I have not always been a Rigoberto. Wale interrupts with, entire time I was getting ready and referring to the baby as Elias, and now I could have named him whatever I wanted. And I was already so far ahead in my pregnancy that I kind of forgot to choose a different name. My dad lets out a laugh and I jump in saying, Wale, how do you forget you got to name your baby? Raising my hand to gesture to my dad, who then leans forward and tilts his head and repeats in a sarcastic but affectionate tone, yeah, ma, how do you forget you had to name me? Wale waved her hand, dismissing the question, and leans back into her chair with my apa's arm draped over the top of it. I told you, she said. I was pregnant and tired and dealing with other things. She picks up a tortilla and starts making the taco when apa nudges her a little, saying, tell her what happened the day Erigo was born. And then my dad suddenly jumps in and says, I got it, ma. He turns towards me and gives this whole spiel about how when Wale went into labor, Apa was at work and they couldn't get in contact with him until after the birth. But him and Wale still hadn't decided on a new name yet. that she was so tired from the delivery and didn't want to wait for her pa to deal with the paperwork that she just made up a name on the spot. While in APA laughed and laughed, watching my dad's face as he was telling this was amazing. Names, they carry so much weight and history and power, even the made up ones. So seeing the joy in his face and his eyes light up, watching his parents laugh at their decision and seeing him smile wide and open as he told me the story of his name for the first time, made me yearn for the next time I got to hear it.
Yeah. Well, you know, Confucius said that the beginning of wisdom is to call things by their proper name. And I'm not sure I know exactly what that means, but I'm curious if you have a notion.
Well, for me, the wisdom part kind of separates it. But whenever you call something by their name and their proper name, it's always a sign of respect, just that you acknowledge them for what they are and who they are.
Mm-hmm.
That's what that's for me.
Yeah, good point. Yeah, you know, learning about your name is a story prompt that I typically recommend, and you did a masterful job with it. I want listeners to know that it's an example of something that you can think about that will prompt a story, because oftentimes people wonder if they have anything to tell a story about. And of course, one of the questions is, hey, where did your name come from? And that's going to do something. I know what this one means, and that is when we have the possibility of making our names remembered long after we're gone, I think all of your names will be remembered. That comes from the old philosophy that tigers leave their skins, but people die and leave their names. And I can't emphasize enough how our names are far more descriptive and far more revealing than anyone might imagine. You know, I've always believed that our life is a story and our story is our life. But if I asked each one of you to give me a word, one word that best describes how you want others to characterize the way that you lived your life so far, what would that be? Andy?
Chaotic.
Chaotic? Yeah, that would figure for you. Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one. Josh?
Thoughtful.
Okay. You say that with some trepidation. You question that, right? Ah, that's a good one. I can see that too. Well, think about your stories. They have to be fueled by thought, don't they? They have to be fueled by thoughtfulness. They have to be. This last story you told today is a good example. Sylvia?
Inquisitive.
Inquisitive is good. So a lot of you are asking, you're posing these words as if there's a question there. You know, you are a confident group. And I think these are good characteristics. San Juana, you know, sort of a question that I typically ask people, and that is, if your first name was an adjective, what would it be? Of course, I don't ask that much anymore because I'm afraid somebody might not know what an adjective is. So I go this route instead, right? San Juana, what would the word be for you?
Fulfilling.
Andrew?
Hopeful.
All right. Manya?
Perseverance.
That really fits your story. Bianca?
I'm sorry, you said one word to describe our story?
One word, right. To describe your life in story form so far. That one word be?
Fortunate.
Okay. Mai, what about you?
Different.
Okay. Anybody have any shout outs? Huh? Mai, have you got any shout outs? Anybody?
I have a couple.
Yeah. Let us have it.
I want to thank my mom for always being there. It's very hard for you to be a single parent, but you'll always love me no matter what. And wow. I want to thank you.
Okay. Anybody else have any? Nobody else? Okay.
That's all. My sister.
Yeah. Your sister? Bianca, you say your sister?
Yes.
Okay. You know, thank you. Your sister and who else?
Oh, well, for me, it was just both my parents, when they found out I was taking this storytelling class and them sitting next to me in front of me while I told my stories to prepare all for your class. Shout out to
all right. Thank you for those. Thank you, Sylvia Machab, Manya Imman, San Juana Cortina, Andy Jimenez, Mai Pham, Bianca Mendoza, Andrew Eggleston, and Josh Perez for agreeing to tell stories and prove what we have always known. Stories stretch the boundaries of the human heart. Stay put, because after the news comes Living Art, another KPFT exclusive. Make KPFT a part of every day and be sure to join us every Wednesday at 6 p.m. And we always want you to remember, it is never too late to live happily ever after. All right, it's the holiday season, right? A little friends and lovers, boomers, get together. And while you're doing it, tell a story.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. This past September, the remains of Typhoon Murbach wreaked havoc on Alaska's west coast. The region is no stranger to big storms, but the waters in the northern Pacific were unusually warm this year, so Murbach formed much closer to Alaska than most typhoons do. Rick Toman is with the International Arctic Research Center at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. He says by the time the storm slowed down over colder water, it was relatively close to shore, and damage from the wind was severe.
All that wind basically acts as a plow, pushing the water north. And so in many communities, we saw water levels at or near the highest of record.
If Murbach had hit later in the year, sea ice could have helped dampen the waves before they reached shore, and frozen ground would have helped prevent erosion. But the storm hit early.
So no sea ice, no frozen ground to even offer a modicum of protection against the wind and waves.
The storm caused massive erosion and flooding, and global warming makes it more likely it will happen again, bringing yet another threat to a place that already has one of the harshest climates in the world. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
With all the things that are happening in the world today, sometimes you just want to escape. KPFT provides sanity and great music 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's also available online at kpft.org. That means you can take us anywhere you go. And also, while you're there, become a sustaining member. It's safe, secure, and easy to do. For all the times you just want to get away, for all the times you just want to smile and enjoy the music styles, from smooth jazz to soul and a whole lot more, let the next sound be your phone. Call 713-526-5738. That's 713-526-5738. And thank you so much.
Here are the upcoming scheduled meetings for KPFT 90.1 FM. All information can be found on kpftx.org. The local station board will meet on Wednesday, December 14th, 2022 at 7 p.m. Central Time. The Development Committee will meet on Tuesday, January 3rd, 2023, at 6 p.m. Central Time. Please refer to kpftx.org for complete details.
Happy holidays from Michael Woodson and Michael Carson of Living Art, heard on Wednesdays at 7, KPFT FM HD1, and Fridays at 6.
You're listening to